This week, the Clarets face Frank Lampard's Chelsea as Turf Moor welcomes the Southerners with all of their blankets, hot water bottles and gloves. This is the No Nay Never podcast. Hello and welcome back to another edition of the No Nay Never podcast. Oh no, that's a preview show. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and I am joined this week by regular panellist Robbie Kopack. And and Richard Steele. Robbie, Richard, welcome back.
How do you do?
Hi, Natalie, how are you?
Yeah, I'd feel a lot better if we just had to got absolutely spanked at home to a Chelsea side. But, you know, nevertheless, all is well. Of course, Clarets fans, Saturday was not quite the game that we thought it was going to be. I'm going to kind of take responsibility for this because I think I did say on the preview show that I thought it was going to be a tight game. I felt very confident we were going to get at least a point out of it. And I think I even said the immortal line, I just can't see us conceding like four goals against Chelsea. And then at one point it was indeed 4-0. Quite a comprehensive victory for Chelsea in the end, albeit I don't think the Clarets particularly helped themselves or gave that strong an account of themselves, unfortunately. It was always going to be a tough game in the end, but I think a few players who were perhaps a little bit out of sorts added to a big pot of difficult afternoon, shall we say. Although we were incredibly boosted by two sensational goals towards the end, but we've got loads to unpick, so let's get straight in there. Robbie, let's start with you. A few people missing. Wood, we know, didn't make it because it was a late fitness test. We had a little bit of moving people around in the squad, but actually I just want to concentrate in the first bit on the first 30-35 minutes of the game. I actually thought the Clarets started really well and were giving just as much as they got.
Yeah, it's a strange result to process, really, because, like you said, the performance actually quite positive. I thought we played quite high up the pitch, played some really good football as well against, you know, one of the bigger sides. I think in previous seasons we'd probably sit back and sort of invite Chelsea on and, in a way, kind of wait for them to score. But I really thought we played on the front foot and it was us trying to, you know, really make it difficult for Chelsea. And yeah, for half an hour, I thought we were excellent. Even after we went 1-0 down, I thought the response was actually really good. And I actually still felt quite confident that we'd actually get something. But to concede a second on the stroke for half-time was like a real light signal for us.
Yeah, Richard, that's a really interesting point, and it's something that I noticed, actually. I found that there was a consistency when we went 1-0 down in that they didn't change their style of play. They just carried on and it was almost as if it was still 0-0. They didn't initially cave in and they didn't seem to shy away from the job at hand. And I think that's perhaps different mentally than some of the sides we've seen in previous seasons.
Yeah, I think initially after we went 1-0 down, I think we actually started to play better. It was almost like, well, we're 1-0 down now. We might as well, you know, have a go, and we freed ourselves up. And obviously, Barnes missed an absolute sitter at 1-0. I'm still not quite sure how he missed it now, an open goal. But then I would say the last 5 minutes of the half, or the 5 minutes before we conceded, that's when Chelsea started to get on top again. And I think that maybe come down to why Tarkey maybe give the ball away, because we didn't have much possession at that point, and possibly he just wanted to keep the ball rather than just hoof it up the pitch. But like Robbie said, I thought at 1-0 we was right in the game and we didn't deserve to be losing. But unfortunately, that second goal was a sucker punch, really, and then it was always going to be an uphill task to get back in the game.
Yeah, I think I remember looking at the clock, and it was at about 34, 35 minutes gone, and I remember saying to my dad, it just feels like the tide has turned a little bit here, and I just felt that Chelsea had started to take control of the game and we were no longer dominating the narrative. We were having to react rather than be proactive, and like you say, Richard, at that point, that's when they just started to just turn the screw a little bit, and a bit the pressure came on, and we just didn't seem to handle them as well as they did. Obviously, you've already mentioned that Barnes miss. I completely agree with you. I'm not really sure how that didn't go in. I'll come on to it in the middle of a minute, but it was a difficult game all round, I think, for Ashley at the weekend. But Richard, I'm going to stick with you because obviously we've got to this point now. Despite, you know, a relatively uneventful first half, I was going to say. We've praised them today about their mental attitude in that first half and how positive we were. And even after going a goal behind, we still maintained some consistency in our approach. You touched on it then. Just expand on that a little bit about not having pressure. What do you think it was about that last 5 minutes that just led to that goal? I mean, for me, there was an easy pass on there. And we've had this a few times this season where the Clarets have conceded either really close to half time or towards the end, and I'm not really sure what they can do differently.
Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer. Like you said, I think possibly, you know, you're playing against a quality team in Chelsea. They've got some really good players. I think sometimes maybe later on in the half, does fatigue come into a little bit? I'm not sure, especially when you're only playing four in midfield, two in the central areas. And a lot of teams, you know, they kind of like overload us in the midfield. So possibly later on in the second half, we just struggle to retain possession a little bit, and the pressure starts to mount on us more there. And that's maybe why we're conceding goals late in the first half, and we've conceded a few late in the second half this season. Two, like you said, yeah, with that pass we just tacked, it's one of them. Yeah, the pass could have been on, but you just think late in the half, could you be a little bit more safe? Could you be a bit more sensible, not trying pass it straight back into midfield? And like you said, it's a few times this season against the bigger teams where we've given goals away that are just really poor. So I don't know if it is a mentality thing where we're kind of maybe a little bit more nervous, a little bit more tentative. You know, when we just don't do the basics quite as well against the big teams. And as we all know, we get punished against them.
We really do. And it does feel harsh, doesn't it? Especially when you see as much football as we do, and we all watch as many games as we possibly can, and you see some teams making mistakes and just getting away with it, and you just think, oh God, that was close. If that had just gone past there, and they put that in the back of the net. Or whenever we seem to make a mistake, we get really heavily punished for it. You're absolutely right. And Robert, no more so than the first goal, of course. I'm getting the first two goals out of the way pretty early on, so we can just look at the rest of the game, because poor Matt Lawton, there's just no way of getting around it. He's not going to want to watch that first goal again, is he?
No, he. I think he just tried to play a simple pass to Tarkowski. I think he just loses his footing. But actually, thinking back, it looked like Tarkowski actually made up the ground quite well. But then obviously a couple of step overs, and it's a really good finish, to be fair. And that's what £60 million gets you. And like I said, Chelsea weren't too great at the back, but we just didn't punish them, and Chelsea were ruthless. Like, I think it was like four opportunities and four goals.
It didn't feel like a 4-0 game though, did it? I was thinking this at the time. I was looking at the clock and I was like, how are we 4-0 down, Robbie? I mean, we very rarely get turned over by that many goals, but given that, this is a question I saw a few times actually on Twitter, given that the deficit ended up just being two goals, we ended up pulling a couple back. Would you have rather lost 2-0? Or, I guess, how do you feel? Would you rather have lost 2-0, or would you rather have been 4-0 down and still maintain that fight back?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think when we talked about this on Saturday night, I think I said I'd rather lose 2-0 because I like us to be quite resilient and show that sort of resilience when you're sort of under pressure. But at the same time, we were 4-0 down, and I thought the subs like made a really good impact, and it goes to show like the character that we do have, that we don't give up. Like we saw last year when Chelsea beat us 4-0, we just caved in and we just didn't look interested. As 12 months on, there was a bit of a reaction and there was a bit of excitement towards you, and you sort of come off with a little bit of pride that you sort of pulled it back a little bit. Which obviously, I think the Jay Rodriguez goal like helped because it's an absolute worldie. We'll probably win the goal of the season now. So I just think that just helps everything, really.
Yeah, some good points there. Richard, I can't remember where you came down on this side of the fence when we were talking about this in the group chat. Robbie's right. For some reason, I thought this was on social media, but it's absolutely right. My worlds are blurring into one, and this was a debate that we all had coming off the turf in our group chat from the None and Ever team. Richard, I can't remember what you ended up saying. Would you have Would you have felt more comfortable losing 2-0, or were you happy with the fight back from 4-0 to 4-2?
I think it's much of a muchness, really. Obviously, you've got to be happy with the character of the team. You know, like Robbie said, at 4-0, you know, last season we just caved in. And even on Saturday, you're thinking, you know, after watching the Southampton game on Friday, thinking, God, I hope this doesn't become like 6-7 and becomes an absolute battering. So 4-2 looks a lot more respectable, but I think if it's 2-0 at half-time and we lose 2-0, I think we're in the game for longer. And, you know, Dai said, which is a positive, is that we are creating more chances against the bigger teams. And we could have scored 4 or 5 at the weekend. And, you know, we missed 2 really easy chances with Barnes. But at the same time, we're not looking quite as solid. I made a point to my dad when we was leaving the game. The season when we come 7th, I can't remember once conceding a goal like that, where we, you know, cheaply give the ball away. And, you know, the first 3 goals we did on Saturday, the second goal at Liverpool, and then the goal at Arsenal when Gunmanson gave the ball away. So it's something we just really need to just tighten up on and not giving those silly goals away.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, is that, Richard. I think, I wonder if there's just an element of we can't have both at our stage of development and with the squad and the players that we've got. And it's almost like if we tighten up and get back to being as defensive as we were in the European campaign season, well, the year we qualified for Europe, we know that season that we were similarly as frustrated with the lack of chances and the lack of the entertainment factor. So if you then move away from that and try and play more openly and play more attacking football, you are going to leave pockets at the back and you're going to leave yourself more exposed. And, you know, you look at some of the sizes, and I think probably as much as I hate him, Bournemouth is probably a really good example of this. They're a side that could very well be pushing for top for that 7th place spot, and they never really look like they're going to be anywhere near relegation. But there's that laughable thing where you always say Bournemouth have to score 4 in a game because they're going to concede 3. Now maybe they're too far the other way, but I wonder whether there's just an element of that. Richard, what do you think?
I don't even think it's about tightening up at the back. I think it's just about giving easy balls away. I thought we were playing absolutely perfectly fine on Saturday. I didn't think we looked in massively defensive pressure. Same against Liverpool, we were defending really well and tightly. But it doesn't matter who you're playing against, really. If you just give simple balls away like that when you're on the transition, you're going to give goals away. You know, about what you said there about the entertainment factor, you know, if we win 1-0 every game for me instead of losing 4-2, I'll be far more entertained, especially leaving the game.
Oh, that's interesting. So for you, obviously you get more, well, I suppose this is an obvious point, but for you the win is win at all costs, and even if the game's been quite painful to watch, it's, well, I suppose that's taking it to the extremes, I guess. And of course you're not advocating that the game is horrendously dull every single game, because yeah, that's going to be damaging. But there is a different school of thought out there, Richard, that people, and I've seen a lot of it on social media, where people will say they'd rather lose 4-0 every game than watch really boring, dull, negative football just to be entertained. Now, I'm pretty sure that if we lost all games for the entire season and lost them all 4-0, they'd probably revise that one. But it's an interesting point. Moving on then, obviously we've talked about the defence, we've talked about being 4-0 down. Generally speaking, Robbie, it was a difficult afternoon for Ashley Barnes. He didn't quite look as at the races, did he has done in previous games. But I wanted to talk more about the shape of the team and the focus of our attack when Chris Wood isn't playing. For me, rapidly becoming the most important player in our squad. What do you think?
Yeah, I've been one of Chris Wood's biggest fans this season. Probably since he's actually joined the club, really. But I think he does get a lot of unfair stick. Yeah, I think Ashley Barnes played, obviously with Wood not in the side, I think Ashley Barnes sort of took his position, has been like the focal point and been like the target man. And it didn't quite work out. Obviously, Zouma pretty much won everything in the air against him. And it's usually Barnes who's dropping deeper, as this time it was Joe Rodriguez, who had an okay afternoon, to be fair. But yeah, we just really struggled, especially with Dwight McNeil, because McNeil was outstanding on Saturday. A lot of his deliveries probably missed, like, that Chris Wood in the box, you know, someone to hang it up to. because a lot of the crosses were sort of low and they were easily cleared, and we just didn't really have that focal point in the box to really aim for.
I mean, how do you feel about this, Richard? Do you think that it's getting to the point where we are completely, I don't want to say one-dimensional, because we saw how different our attacking style became when we went 4-3-3 away at Villa, but it was a little bit disconcerting, wasn't it, to see that we didn't really have as effective a backup without Chris Wood in the squad as we did with it? That's obviously, you don't want to be in that position, I guess, do you?
Yeah, it's obviously, all I'm going to say is, I think if Wood played on Saturday, the game would have been 1-1, and then it would have been a completely different play, completely different game. I don't think the structure of the team or the way the team played was any different than if Wood was playing. You know, because we played some good football, we got the ball out wide the same like we normally do. Like Robbie said, Dermot Neil was outstanding. But if he played, he definitely would have scored on Saturday. And I think that's just what you miss. When he plays well, he's a really good finisher. So, yeah, I think that's just the key point I'll take away from Saturday. It's not just necessarily about all our general play, but he definitely would have scored on Saturday too, you know, and it would have made the game a lot more difficult for Chelsea.
Yeah, that is so true. It was a game that was just so needing a Burnley goal, either to go 1-1 or to just take the lead initially, wasn't it? And I just don't think we would have seen them score 4 goals if we'd have got into that game early and we'd have managed to get one of those goals in. But we did manage to get goals in, Richard, and I think, like Robbie alluded to earlier on, it was such a massively encouraging sign to see it 4-0 down with, 20 minutes left to play. They were still searching for that goal, and we ended up scoring 2 goals really late on. And actually, if I remember rightly, there was a corner right after the second. I just thought, oi, if this is going to go in here, this is going to be an interesting 5 minutes. But Richard, I'm particularly pleased with the first one with Jay, because I thought, again, he was quite a quiet game for him, and it was a frustrating game. We didn't really get to play the kind of football that suited his strengths. But just the audacity of that strike was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, it was a great goal. I think, me personally, I think since Rodriguez has started, or really since that Villa game when he came on at half-time, I think he's been really good for us. And like you said, it was a great strike. I'm always someone who's wanting us to sign a few more technical players so we can keep the ball and, you know, so we can be a little bit tidier. And even, you know, like on Saturday, I wouldn't say like he did a massive amount, but he doesn't give the ball away, or his first touch is tidy. He's an intelligent player. I'm probably more critical about Barnes than what some other players are, than what some other fans are. Because sometimes I just watch him and I think, you just do the basics so poorly, and it means like we lose possession and then he starts giving fouls away. And I personally think now, you know, his performances, even with Wood coming back, I think he deserves an extended run in the team, partnering Wood, because he offers you something different. He can drop deeper, link up play with a number 10 role. I think out of the 3 strikers, he's the best with his feet. And, you know, there's no chance Wood or Barnes would have scored that quality goal that Rodriguez did, taking it, you know, first, you know, great first touch driving at the defence, and then, you know, a wonderful goal in the top corner. Even though it was nice to have that consolation goal, you know, I think it would have been a bit more thrilling if it was the winner on Saturday away at Sheffield United. But, you know, you can never, you know, not enjoy those quality of goals.
Yeah, that's true. I do hope he scores some next weekend. No, you're absolutely right. I think he is a very clever player. He's always thinking about what he's going to do next. And I think one of the things that impresses me about Jay is that he doesn't waste energy. He's always making the intelligent run, and it works very efficiently. And I think we saw that on Saturday. You know, he was struggling to make as all of them were, to make the mark on the side, especially if it was 4-0 down. But he still had that vision and that drive to try and take that shot on, because essentially he thought that he could put it in the back of the net. I'm super interested to hear you talk about partnering Jay up front with Wood, because I did think, out of the two of them, I just didn't ever think that Barnes and Rodriguez would play that well together. I think he's much more suited to Wood's style of play. So the problem is, of course, Richard, is can you actually see, assuming they're both fit, can you actually see him not playing Wood and Barnes together?
Why not? Obviously, you've had spells this season where Barnes has scored, then Wood scored. I wouldn't say that they've combined that well together. As the goals that Barnes scored, as the goals that Wood scored, been a direct result of them playing up front together. I'm not quite sure, maybe. But you look at Rodriguez, he's scored 3 league goals now and he's played far less minutes than the two of them. I think I get why Dyche does it, he wants a settled team, but I think if he plays Wood and Rodriguez on Saturday, it's not because Barnes is a bad player or, you know, it doesn't mean Barnes isn't going to play again this season. It's just mixing it up a little bit and just playing somebody who I think is in better form, and then Barnes can come off the bench. So you've got two players in Wood and Rodriguez who have scored a lot recently. You know, Rodriguez is just getting into his groove. So I don't see then why you drop him and play Wood and then play Barnes. But at the same time, I've said this before about not picking people and then they go and score two. You know, I've said it many times about Endrick, and then he's proved me wrong. But that's why I don't get paid to make the big decisions.
You don't get paid to come on the No Never podcast either, Richard, I'm afraid. I'm sorry to break it to you. But no, I've got to say, though, I know you. This is your first full season where you've started regularly appearing on the podcast. But one of the things I do enjoy about your analysis is that you aren't afraid to be changed or turned by decisions. You're very good at analysing the game, but you're also very clear when somebody has proved you wrong that you will give credit where credit's due. Robbie, one player who has had credit where it's credit due all season has been, of course, the ridiculous form and the ridiculous shining light that is Dwight McNeil. Despite the troubles, but it was, I think, you know, you've got to give Chelsea some credit as well, and they were a very good side, much better than I was expecting, I'm not going to lie. But he looked like he could have been playing for Chelsea. He was that good for me on Saturday.
Yeah, I must admit, during the game, I did actually look to see whether McNeil would actually fit in that Chelsea side, because he was absolutely sensational. I thought he had the better of Azpilicueta for most of the afternoon. Actually, funnily enough, I had a guy sat next to me on Saturday, and he kicked off when Dwight McNeil were given the Man of the Match award. The quote was, "Oh, he's only just been given that because he scored a goal," and just like criticised him throughout the entire second half. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I really had to bite my tongue, because I thought McNeil was an absolute dream to watch. Every time he got on the ball, you knew he was going to skip past the defender and whip a ball in. And like I said, miss Chris Wood in the box. He was just so positive, and he just got to the byline every time. It's just something a little bit different. We've been so used to our wingers in the last couple of seasons under Dyche, sort of been a little bit passive and sort of cutting on the inside, or maybe playing like a simple ball. But McNeil will do like the harder thing and run to the byline, try and get a cross in and try and win a corner at least. And he was just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it was a dream to watch. Richard, I'm going to put you on the spot. Is Dwight McNeil a Burnley player next season?
I hope so, but he's going to have a lot of admirers. But at the same time, we've got to sell him for the right price. I think he's definitely getting into the bracket where, is he worth 50 million? I don't think I'd accept anything less than that, because the lad's got so much potential. As Robbie was saying, every time you get the ball, you know, he's positive, you know, he's looking to beat his fullback. He's one of the few players in this Burnley team who you actually get on your edge of the seat when he wins the ball. I think he can play on the left, he can play on the right. I think he could even play in central midfield if he was playing with a three. And you know, the world really is at his oyster. What he's got, which a lot of young players don't have, he's got a final product too. Fantastic delivery, he's got a great strike on him. I really hope we can keep him for one more year, but I really do think he's destined to go to the very top, and you know, good luck to him.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree. I will be absolutely amazed if he's here next season. Amazed. I'll be delighted, don't get me wrong, I'll be amazed. But it's just the way he just teases the ball. It's like, I don't know if I can say this. I might actually give Matt a heads up here, because he can always bleep me out if not. But to talk about food porn, chip porn and things like that, it's like football porn, watching that ball between his feet. He'd just be able to just slide it and pass it, and he'll just run past players, and you just think, how is that ball still at your feet? He very much is a joy to watch. If we do lose him, though, Robbie, his replacement, also made starting to make an appearance back in the squad. We are, of course, talking about Robbie Brady. Really positive when he came on, I thought he did really well, and he just gave that attack a little bit of charge. I think, for me, I would have brought Robbie on as soon as we went 3-0 down, because what's the harm? We're 3-0 down, and you may as well get Robbie some match fitness and get some minutes in his legs. I think he left it too late, don't you, Robbie?
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, for the first time, Robbie Brady actually come back into side. I didn't really see much of the Leicester game, so I don't really know how well he performed. But yeah, I thought his little half an hour cameo, I thought he was excellent. He got two assists as well, didn't he? So that's a nice little bonus for him. But I think, obviously, since his injury at Leicester a couple of years ago, we've never really seen him. We've only really seen him in little like drips, and he's never really looked the same. But I thought on Saturday he looked really positive. He looked like he played a little more centrally as well. But he seemed to like link up with the strikers really well, and he seemed really positive trying to get the ball forward and actually run with the ball at his feet. And it looked like the Robbie Brady of a couple of years ago, where he was in the form of his life. And if we can get that proper like match fitness like in him and keep him fit, I think he could have a really good season again.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, Anna. I wonder, Richard, do you think these kind of concerns play on players mentally? Because surely Robbie's now got to be in that mentality where he knows he's got to take every single chance and play absolutely to the best of his ability, because he's going to have to start trying to get some football in him because he's been injured that much since we got him. I wonder if that plays on them mentally, almost like they've got a big point to prove.
I think both sides of it mentally. I think when you come back from a lot of injuries, it takes a while to get the form back. You know, these lads, they're not robots. Are people expecting him to come back in the team and be as good as he was just before he got injured? He needs a run of games. And like you said, he's definitely got a point to prove now. We came for a lot of money. And hopefully he can get a good run of games. I know Robbie mentioned before that he didn't really see much of the Leicester game. I thought he played well there. I thought first half he was excellent. You know, he was really tidy on the ball, give us good whip out on that left. And then second half, obviously we're not playing a lot of games, he got tired and started to fade and he come off then. I'd like to see him, get a really good run in the team. I think if you've got him and McNeil on both flanks, you can exchange and swap who goes on the left and the right. And I think you can have a real threat on both wings. Like Bobby said, fingers crossed he can come back this season, and have a real impact.
If you were going to start him, Richard, who would you drop? What midfield would you play? Is it Hendrick that goes, or would you give one of Westwood or Corkum, a bit of a rest and play Hendrick in the middle? What formation would you go for?
So, yeah, I'd still go the 4-4-2, and I'd like to see McNeil and Brady out wide, whichever wing, as I said before, you could swap him, maybe start McNeil on the left where he's been used to. But I think he's a real threat on the right coming in, because he's got a great strike. I'd actually like to see Hendrick and Westwood get a run of games in midfield. You know, as I've mentioned before, so far I think Hendrick has been disappointing at Burnley overall. But I think since he's come into the scene this season, he started really well. And, what's the point in putting him out wide again when he's had a run of games? He's not a winger. Mick McCarthy said this for Ireland. And I think him and Westwood in midfield now, they give you a lot more energy. You know, Jack Cork's one of my favourite all-time players. I just feel like he's getting to the point now where he's more of a squad player than a starting 11 player. That's not to write him off at all just yet. I would just like to see Hendrick and Westwood get a go in middle of midfield and, get Brady and McNeil playing out wide, because we've got a lot more creativity in them positions rather than Hendrick being wasted where he's not, still really comfortable playing.
That's super interesting. Does that strategy change if we're away from home, though, Richard? Do you still think you would want us to be more resolute and save that attacking threat and that creative play for just home games? Or do you think we just go for it away from home as well?
Yeah, possibly. Like I said, if he doesn't start Brady on Saturday and he decides to play Hendrick out wide, I'm not going to, have a cry or a whinge about it. But like I said, yeah, possibly away from home, we can maybe look at playing Hendrick out there for a bit more resilience, and then look to bring Brady off the bench as the game goes on. Like you said, at home game, you know, possibly against Sheffield United, maybe go that way, and then next, and then the game after at West Ham, you know, play with Grady and McNeil out wide, you know, where we can be a little bit more attacking and on the front foot.
Well, you heard it here first, listeners. We're going to have some change in formation. Richard Steele's going to get on the Dutch hotline. He's going to tell him what it is. Robbie, let's come back to you then as we leave the immediate analysis of the Chelsea game. And I'm going to ask you for your man of the match, please.
Dwight McNeil. I don't think there's any contest, really. I thought Jack Cork had a good game. I know we just talked about him briefly there. I thought he had a really good game, but I thought Dwight McNeil was just different gravy. He looked right at home within that company. And yeah, I thought just outstanding for 90 minutes.
I feel like there might be a bit of a clean sweep here. Richard, who was your man of the match?
Yeah, there's only one. I thought he was head and shoulders above any Burnley player. So yeah, it's got to be McNeil.
And it's a 3 from me. Yes, I also voted for McNeil. I think they both, Robbie and Richard, are absolutely right. He was just so much better than everybody else on the pitch. I don't really think that we can give it to anybody else. This week's None and Ever Man of the Match goes to Dwight McNeil, or as Sky Sports like to call him, Aidan O'Neill. So that's everything on the Chelsea game this week. I'm getting blown away by Richard's maverick midfield, and it's rocked me a little bit. That's all we're going to talk about on the actual immediate match reaction to the Chelsea game. But what did you think? Do you agree with Richard's? This is why Richard's doing really well in the Fantasy Football League, by the way. He's clearly a genius at swapping players around. Do you agree with Richard? Would you like to see Hendrick and Westwood in the centre of midfield and Brady and McNeil on the wings, or would you try something completely different? Why don't you tweet us at No Nay Never, or send us an email at podcast@nonaynever.net. Moving on, though, to this week's talking point. I think it had to just be young Mr. Dyche's crusade about the growing diving culture in football. He's been on a bit of a rant in all of his post-match interviews, quite rightly as well, actually, I think, considering how much this must be grating on him. What has prompted this, you ask? Well, of course, it was the shambolic episode where Hudson-Odoi, at 4-0 up, decided he was going to blatantly dive in the area and try and deceive the referee to win his side a penalty. I think Michael Oliver was hilariously couldn't get his whistle to his mouth quick enough. He wanted to award the penalty. He almost dropped the whistle on the floor. He was trying to blow for the penalty straight away. Ben Mee actually did go straight to the referee and went, no way was that a penalty. And after some VAR debate, it was overruled. The VAR officials actually overruled a match official, made a decision in Burnley's favour, which at 4-0 down was, yeah, really greatly appreciated. Thanks. You know, you could have done that last week at Leicester, but never mind. Robbie, let's start with you. Do you think Dyche has got a point? Do we think there is now a growing diving culture, or has it always been there?
You know what? I think it's a penalty. I don't think Hudson-Odoi dives. I think it's a penalty.
Yeah, wow, okay.
I think I'm the only Burnley fan who actually thinks it is. Am I the only one who sees Matt Lawton actually, like, shove him?
Yes.
I actually think Matt Lawton, not shoves him, a little push, and it looks like there's one angle where it looks like it just clips the back of his Achilles. Now, Hudson-Odoi makes a meal of it, like...
Okay.
Let me finish.
No, I was going to say, please do. That's what I was going to say. I was just going to say, let's pause it.
Like, but... If you feel contact, you go down. If you feel contact, you go down. And Matt Lawton definitely does put a hand on his back, as if like a bit like when Ramsey won a penalty at Turf a couple of years ago, and that was given as a penalty. And it, like I say, it does look like it's a little clip. And yeah, I still think it's a penalty. I've seen it back a few times now, and I still think we got away with it.
Wow. Because presumably, I assume the VAR officials were actually only concentrating on Tarkowski's leg. What I was going to say when you were in there, I was agreeing with you. I was like, this is amazing. I wasn't expecting this reaction. Let's just pause the general debate around diving in football then and just... Richard, how do you feel about this? Do you think it was a penalty or do you think he did dive?
Live, it just looked like Matt Lawton just blatantly pushed him. He looked like his head was all over the place at that point, and he just pushed him over. What I would say from the replays, and this is where VAR is cloudy for me, we got annoyed with the goal being disallowed, because we said, how can you clearly overturn a decision that was on the pitch when it's so clear? And I agree with Robbie at the sense that I think, how can you clearly say that was 100% a dive? And this is what I don't get about VAR at the moment. I thought it had to be, it's got to be clear and obvious error. That's the reason, and that's the reason we're overturning it. The contact was very, very minimal, and it probably was soft. And there was an element of it where he did that, but there was still contact. You could see that live in the stadium. So if that was Burnley and we got given that penalty, say a 0-0 this weekend against Sheffield United, and that got overturned and it didn't get given, and say Rodriguez got done for diving, we'd be all on Twitter fuming about it.
Yeah, that
I would 100% agree.
Yeah,
that's
like
the point I was going
to
make.
Yeah, no, I think he has got a point there. To be honest, I hadn't seen the Lawton shove. I hadn't seen it live. I'm at the other side of the stadium, so I didn't have that clear review in it. And all of the replays that I've been watching, I've been concentrating on, which is what I thought he'd given it for, Tarkowski's leg. Now, I reached the same conclusion that you guys did, but from a different angle, in that I don't think it was a penalty. So I think it was right to not give it. I disagree with that, but that's caveated by the fact that I didn't see the Lawton shove. But I also don't think it's a dive either. And I think one of the things that I don't like about VAR in making these decisions is that when you're going to slow down action to so many frames per second to really try and decide whether there's contact, what you're taking away from it is the context of the actual challenge. And Hudson-Odoi is a fast player, and it was late in the game, and he still had enough in his engine to be able to run at our very tired defenders, who were 4-0 down at the time and fed up. And Tarki puts his leg out. I don't think I'd realised until I saw Match of the Day just how far he'd stretched his leg out. And for me, I think that there's a natural reaction to just get out of his way, because if he does make contact with Tarkowski's leg, he's going to potentially injure himself there. So, yeah, I think I come down on the same side as you, but for a different reason. So I'm going to look at this again after tonight's recording and see if I can find this Lawton shove. But Richard, moving on to you. So I guess where we've got at the moment is that we don't think it was a dive, although he does make more of it. Now, Dyche has clearly disagreed with that. He has thought that it was a blatant foul. And it's not just immediately after the game. He's been on radio tonight, so he's had time to see this again. So he's not even diluted his rant about it at all. So going back to the initial point then, is there a diving culture? We saw, of course, a couple of weeks ago, the very controversial penalty that Marnie won to win against Leicester. I guess we thought, didn't we, that VAR was going to rule this kind of behaviour out? But it doesn't seem to have done, does it?
I'll go back to a couple of points that you made about Dyche being on the radio. And Dyche is very clever. He'll go on TV, radio, and he'll start moaning about diving, which, you know, or in this instance, diving. And it's just to detract the fact that two of his players, Lawton and Tarkowski, made absolute howlers. So now, us as Burnley fans on this podcast and the media, rather than us talking about how bad some of our day was on Saturday, we're talking about diving. So it gets our players out of the focus, which is very clever then from him. I think, secondly, is there a diving culture? I think so, still, in certain players. But do we do it? Does Barnes do it? Which is another talking point. Does Barnes do it? Absolutely. But he does it in a different way. And with VAR eradicating it, well, VAR is just not working at the moment, but that's a completely other issue. So that's kind of my summary of the different points you made in that, you know, in the question you asked me.
Yes, it's a good summary, and I don't have the energy to have another VAR debate this week. We're done with those. Robbie, Richard makes some really interesting points there. I quite like the idea that Dyche is starting to manipulate the media and manipulate the narrative that comes out of the club, because if he can protect his players, then that's a really good thing. he talks a lot, doesn't he, about this idea about respect. But one thing that I want to pick up on what Richard said there is, does Barnes do it? Yes, he absolutely does, but he does it in a different way. Darch himself came out in this rant that he's been on in the press to say he's not talking about clever play and gamesmanship. That's okay. Where are we drawing the line here? So if what he's saying is that if you can induce some contact and, you know, win a legitimate penalty, but you've caused that player to do that, how is that different from just the blatant dive? Is that too simplistic, do we think? Is there a difference?
Yeah, because pretty much Dacher's game plan pretty much ever since he's been at Burnley is to hit the ball to Ashley Barnes. Barnes gets the tiniest little shoves in the back to win a free kick so we can launch the ball into the box from an indirect free kick. And there's absolutely no difference in a player sort of going down easy in the box to win a penalty. It's pretty much the same thing. I've said it before that I think Dacher's a hypocrite when it comes to little things like this. It really annoys me that he will talk about diving and stuff like that when we're pretty much, we do that every week. And it's not just like Ashley Barnes, like Jack Cork goes to ground very easily in the middle of the pitch to when he's under pressure. It happens. There's absolutely no difference in it at all.
What do you think, Richard? Do you think Darch is on difficult ground here, if he wants to take the moral high ground and a lot of the points he's saying are absolutely right, by the way. I'm not disputing that his idea of respect and fairness and just having that high ground in a game is admirable. I'm just a bit confused with this narrative about what he says is acceptable. Do you think he's in danger of blurring it a little bit too much that he's not going to be taken seriously, maybe?
I 100% agree. Diving is wrong and it should be stamped out. But as Robbie mentioned then, you know, Barnes is the worst of it for gamesmanship. There's so many... I get quite frustrated with him. Sometimes when the ball goes up front, he's more interested in falling on the floor than actually winning a header or holding the ball up. And I understand why other fans get frustrated with Dice, because they're like, well, hold on a minute. You know, you're saying our players go down in the box to try and win a penalty, but Barnes is flinging himself on the floor all the time trying to win a foul. So I think he's just got to be a little bit careful on this crusade for diving, because he is 100% on and it should be stamped out of the game. But at the same time, he can't then applaud Barnes or Cork in the middle of the park for going down, or when Pope takes a long, long time to take his goal kicks. Again, I think he's on thin ice with a high ground, and I think he should just, now concentrate on the football a little bit more, instead of just constantly keeping bringing it back up. Because if he just constantly keeps talking about it, then it just ends up being white noise and people won't take him seriously about it.
Yeah, spot on, guys. There's some really good points in there. I don't know where this is going to go, to be honest. And like I say, that he's in danger of having the backlash against him, like you say, with this. Well, we already see it from opposition fans when they go on their social media rants about his hypocrisy and how he whinges about things, but his team, apparently we're the dirtiest team in the league, but yeah, no, we're not. But yeah, guys, you make a really good point there. He has to be very careful which battle he chooses here. That said, we have seen consistently over the years managers who manipulate the press and keep the narrative away. And one of the things I've been frustrated about being Premier League for as long as we have is that you do lose that control. And that's particularly important when you are a family, local run club like Burnley is. We've been so used to dictating what our narrative is, what our story is, what people think of us, and we do it our way. When you join such a global machine that the Premier League is, you have very little control over what is said about you and what the narrative in the press is. So if Dyche is trying to, in his way, reclaim some of that control and get the message to be what he wants it to be, even if it's just a simple thing as creating an absolute smokescreen to avoid, like you said, some issues of his own or some things in the match that he doesn't want to get in the press, then so be it. And if he's prepared to stake his reputation for tomorrow's fish and chip paper, then so be it. But let's keep an eye on this one, because there is certainly not going to be the first time this season that a player dives. There's not going to be the first time this season that players try things against us and we are completely shafted, shall we say, with decisions that somebody has won against us. And we'll see what the outcome of the game is in comparison to what Deitch's overall analysis is. That's all we've got time for this week. That has been a thoroughly enjoyable review of a slightly painful game at home against Chelsea, but some good bits to take away from it. And I think we all left the ground chuckling a little bit at the just the audacity of two very late spectacular goals. It just lifted the doom and gloom a little bit. I will be back with Dave on Friday to look at the preview show, where we're also joined by Sheffield United fan to look at our trip to Bramall Lane this weekend. And the rest of the team will be back next Tuesday as usual to analyse what will hopefully be a fantastic 3 points on the road. Thank you as ever to Robbie Kopak and Richard Steele, my fantastic panellists, and who've given up their time this evening to come and talk through that painful game. It's always more difficult to analyse when it's been a loss and you don't necessarily want to relive it again. So, guys, it's been very much appreciated and I've enjoyed your company. Thanks to producer Matt for editing this week's podcast and knitting it all together for us. And thanks to band Joyce for providing us with our jingle music. Last but by no means least, my thanks as ever go to you, the listeners, for downloading and listening to this episode. Your support is hugely appreciated and we would not be here without you. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the No Name Ever podcast. Until next time.